Welcome to Cronecast. Your hosts, Trudy Callahan and Lisa Austin, are here to encourage you to embrace your inner crone and revel in your wisdom, experience, and intuition. The podcast about women of a certain age for women of any age. This is Cronecast. Good afternoon, Trudy. How are you today?
I'm well today.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You've had a good day?
Yes, I'm a little over-caffeinated, so watch out.
Well, the first thing I wanted to bring to the table today was a quote I found, another crone quote I found in a book called, now, prepare yourself for this, Crones Don't Whine, Concentrated Wisdom for Juicy Women.
Oh boy.
By an author named Dr. Jean Shinoda Bolen. And so I'm going to read this from my phone, so forgive me if I take a pause or two. She says, to be a crone is about inner development, not outer appearance. A crone is a woman who has wisdom, compassion, humor, courage, and vitality. She has a sense of truly being herself, can express what she knows and feels, and take action when need be. She does not avert her eyes or numb her mind from reality. She can see the flaws and perfections in herself and others, but the light in which she sees is not harsh and judgmental. She has learned to trust herself to know what she knows. These crone qualities are not acquired overnight. One does not become a fully fledged crone automatically following menopause, any more than growing older and wiser go hand in hand. There are decades that follow menopause in which to grow psychologically and spiritually. So one of the reasons why I wanted to bring that quote today was because I thought it was a lot more positive than some of the things that we've been reading about crones so far. So I'm really interested to know what you think of A, the title, and B, that quote.
Oh my gosh. Well, there's so much to unpack in the quote, so we might need to go back and take that apart phrase by phrase. I don't know where to go with juicy. I just, you know, for me, all of a sudden there's a sexual connotation. I've no idea where I want to go with that. But before you read that quote, and somewhere in my musings this week, I don't know where I had this thought, but I had written down these two words, becoming yourself.
Mm.
And so that's actually in that quote that you just read.
Yes.
And I think the thing that I appreciate about the stage of life I am in, cronedom.
Yes.
Is that I feel more and more I am becoming myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I can separate that. So we talked before about, and anyone who knows me knows that I'm coming up on 6 years of being a widow. And so I can't tell if part of that is part of the grief cycle where I am, you know, in the last 5 years, as I've entered this time of cronedom, I am also coming up out of, although I will never be totally out of it. I think I still wear grief a bit like a cloak or a scarf or something. It's always there. But I can't separate those two things, Lisa.
I want you to say more about that lack of separation.
Well, those two times in my life are coinciding. So how would I don't want to separate them necessarily, but some of the things I'm experiencing and pondering as you and I talk about cronedom, mm-hmm. is it true for women who are not also in the stage of life that I am in of having just lost their life partner? So are those two things together?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is an experience, that tragic experience, is something that certainly informs your cronedom. I think that given the person you are and all of your experiences that have led up to this point all coalesce to make you a crone, that experience of losing your husband is something that adds a really particular kind of color and texture to this stage in your life and what it means for you to be a crone, that you have an insight into loss that many people, certainly many younger women, simply don't have.
Mm-hmm. Coalesce, I think that's the word I get that, you know, it's all of our life experiences that bring us to become the people
yes.
we are. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the phrase. It was something about inner development and then being yourself. And I had written down a few days ago, becoming yourself. Mm-hmm. What was that, the part of that phrase again?
She has a sense of truly being herself, can express what she knows and feels, and take action when need be. She does not avert her eyes or numb her mind from reality.
Truly being herself. Yeah, I think a lot of women talk about being comfortable in their own skin after the age of 40. I've heard many women have that comment or make that comment about mm-hmm. getting to that point in their life. I need to ponder this a little bit more. But I do feel like I am experiencing becoming myself. And I assumed in the last year or so that was connected to me starting to understand how to navigate life by myself. Mm-hmm. Although interesting, I was flying to Ottawa to take in the performance of Ballet Edmonton at the National Arts Centre in Ottawa. And I was traveling with a friend, a man, mm-hmm. who's really articulate and wonderful, and we have a lot of deep talks when we're alone. And I told him what you and I were doing, because you've met him. I think I can probably say it's Brian Webb.
Yes, Brian.
Brian Webb, artistic director of the Brian Webb Dance Company, and wonderful friend and
gentleman and a scholar.
Yes, and we were talking about you and me doing this podcast. And this was on our plane trip, and, you know, we were delayed, and, you know, we're living in that time of take a lot of time to travel somewhere, folks, because mm-hmm. you just don't know how long it's going to take. And I told him about this and what being a crone meant. And he said, but Trudy, you're not becoming invisible. Like, you know, this notion of a lot of women as they enter later life, you're not invisible. He said, your sphere of influence is actually growing.
Mm.
And I thought, well, that's an interesting observation. I wouldn't say that, but I would, because I can't see that. I can't see my own sphere of influence. But what I do feel is that I am becoming more of myself. I don't know. Is that a convoluted way to talk about that?
Well, it makes me ask a question, and that is, how do you know that you're becoming yourself? What are the indicators for you of that?
Oh, boy, that's a really good question. I think I've gained my footing back. Like, I've gained my confidence back. I question myself less. I worry less about the things that I can't do. We've talked about, I'm kind of, well, if anyone watched me put on the headphones here in this podcast room, I'm like, I don't know which way these things go. I'm not good at that stuff.
You can't be good at everything, Trudy.
Really?
Apparently, yes.
I want to be good at everything.
I know you do. And you're very close.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. But, you know, I can laugh that off now, and I don't feel threatened anymore by the fact that I don't understand where the batteries are in something, or, although YouTube is my friend.
It is a good DIY friend.
Yes, it is. And you know what? No one cares how often I watch, like, I'm the person shoving up the views on the YouTube video about how to do something, because I watch it 6 times in a row before I think, oh, you hold it that way. I have to go through that a fair bit. Where were we?
You were talking about indicators of how you know that you're becoming yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe this goes hand in hand with my personality type. I am an introvert. I've become so much more comfortable being alone and pursuing the things that I want to pursue while I'm alone. I think that grounds me. I think when you know your personality type, it helps you when you embrace that and take care of yourself.
Right.
I'm doing more of that.
That's incredible. That's incredible. One question I want to ask you about that is, you know, we always in this podcast talk about the wisdom, experience, and intuition of women. And so I know yesterday we had a phone call with each other and we started talking about intuition. And so I'm wondering what's happening with your intuition? What and what you even believe intuition is as part of your coming into yourself.
Mm. This is going to be a longer conversation. So I always look words up to see what they actually mean, to make absolutely certain that what I'm thinking they mean is what Merriam-Webster or, you know, some other dictionary thinks. So according to Merriam-Webster, it's the power or faculty of attaining to direct knowledge or cognition without evident rational thought. The other one is immediate apprehension or cognition. And the third one is knowledge or conviction gained by intuition, which, I mean, if that's the definition of intuition, why use the word?
Exactly.
But then one of them says quick and ready insight. Quick and ready insight. I don't know that intuition for me is a quick thing. Let's talk about that a little bit. I looked up my Myers-Briggs.
Mm-hmm.
I am intuitive. That's part of my mm-hmm. personality. But I did not recognize what intuition was until I was probably well into my 30s or early 40s. And perhaps that's true of a lot of people, even if that is your natural personality type. And I can tell you that as a young woman, I was dumb. That gut brain, that intuition factor had not kicked in. And I could have been in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you, I'm going to tell you a story about
that.
I was really young, a young woman, 19 or 20 years old, going to school, working in a business. I'll tell you, it was a bank. I was a receptionist, I guess. I don't actually know what my title was. I typed things on typewriters then. I didn't answer the door like or anything like that, but I seemed to be an assistant to not the manager, but like someone under a guy underneath him, and I don't know what he was called, an assistant manager maybe. Remember, this is a long time ago. I don't really remember those details.
Yep.
I think we had renovated or something, I don't know, but there was a customer appreciation thing one evening, and so a lot of the people that were invited to come were kind of the better customers of the bank, I would imagine.
I see.
And there was a man that was in the bank a lot, and I don't know if he was wealthy. I have no idea. Like, I just did my job. I didn't know who people were.
Right.
But I knew who he was, and he felt familiar to me, and he seemed to be a friend of my boss. Like, they talked a lot and they came in and went out for coffee together and whatever. Okay. So we have this little open house and it's after hours. So this is back in the day when banks closed at 3:30.
Mm.
So it wasn't late in the evening or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
but it was, you know, after 3:30, and there were like platters of food and there may have been alcohol, but I only started drinking wine much later in my life. So I wasn't having any alcohol or anything like that. And as the evening, this guy was there, and he was old to me. But, you know, when you're 20, someone who's 35 is old.
Absolutely.
So I have no idea how old he was. But somehow it came up that I needed to go so I could catch a bus. And he said, "What way are you going? I will drive you." And I thought, this is this nice man who is a customer of my boss. He's like a dad. He's offering to give me a ride. I'll take it. It's cold out. It's, you know, it had gotten dark. It was, I guess it was the time of year when it gets dark quite early. And I said, okay, thanks. I got in his very nice car, and we did not actually drive directly in where I lived. So he had to run an errand, he said. And so we stopped at a building that he said he owned, and he wanted me to go in with him. And I did. I felt perfectly safe. I mean, I see this man regularly. And so he tried to kiss me in the entrance of this building. Kind of, you know, I'm up against a wall. He's a bigger man. You know, I'm quite small.
Mm-hmm.
And I protested, and he backed away immediately and said, oh, I remember this to this day. I don't remember a lot of the details. I can't even quite remember his last name. I have an idea of what it is, but I can't quite get it. But I remember he said this to me, oh, I like you too much to force you.
Oh, brother.
So where was my intuition, Lisa? Why did I not get it? So he was very nice. He took me home. He continued to come in the bank. And, you know, I continued to, you know, alert my boss that he was there or whatever it was. And I can't remember the time frame later, but I did tell my boss what happened. And he said, I wondered why you left with him. And I thought, okay, so other people, even a man, my boss, saw that maybe I should have been intuitive about what could possibly happen. I missed it.
Well, first of all, that's a terrible story. But I think the thing is that I think you're doing what a lot of people who have been, I'm going to say the word victims, of sexual harassment to some degree, you're doing exactly what people, women, tend to do, which is, where was my intuition? What did I do wrong? How did I get myself into this situation where the responsibility for that lies solely with that man?
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, obviously he had some integrity because he didn't, you know, he was very nice. I wouldn't say sheepish, but he was very nice. So I did think, did I give off some kind of vibe? I think I was being nice to him because he was apparently an important customer.
Mm-hmm. But again, this wasn't about anything that you did or didn't do.
It's true. But the thing I not worry about, but have wonderment about is now I am really good at the vibe thing. Mm. I know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So how did I develop that? Was it always there and just unrecognized or unpracticed? Or is that something that comes to you later in life? So that's what I thought of when you talked about intuition. Mm.
Well, I think that intuition begins, I think everyone's born with intuition, and some people hone it to a fine degree and other people don't. And I think the difference is how people are connected to their bodies, because we tend to feel intuition first in our bodies, and then that might travel up to our brains when our brains are going, oh, I feel funny about this. I feel something in my chest. I feel something in my gut. I feel something in even my legs, my hands, that something's amiss here. Something doesn't feel right. And I think what we tend to do over time is that if we're cognizant about it, is that we start attaching those feelings with questions we start asking ourselves. So I'm feeling this, I feel it in my body, I wonder why, I wonder what's going on, what's that feeling about? And we connect our bodily feeling with our cognition. And therefore we're able to use intuition. We're actually able to implement action based on intuition because we're paying attention to what our body's telling us. So my question to you, and you may not be able to remember, was do you think you felt something in your body that didn't make it all the way up to your brain?
I just don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I wondered why I was so naive to think that he was just being a nice man like a dad and didn't want me out in the cold and the dark on the bus.
Well, part of that's being 20, right?
Yeah.
And being trusting and, mm-hmm. and guileless and...
I had no idea.
I mean, I think that what he said to you in that doorway was quite sinister, actually. I like you too much to force you. So if he liked you less, would he have forced you?
Apparently.
That's charming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, I've always tried to remember what was his last name. And I think I know, but I can't quite. I'm not sure. And where were we? I was so new to Edmonton then, mm-hmm. I'm not sure where we went. It wasn't far from the bank I was working in at the time, but I still try to think, oh, I wish I had a better memory on that.
Yeah. Well, you said now that your intuition, your spidey sense now is quite honed. So tell me about that journey from that 20-year-old to who you are now in terms of intuition.
I'm not sure what the journey is other than I've learned to trust now, as you say, that feeling. And it's a, you use the word spidey sense, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It is for me a spidey sense. I feel like I've got that now. And I don't actually know the journey of how I got here. But I've had situations in business where, you know, I've been introduced to someone who has... the appearance of being all that I'm told that person is, mm-hmm. but I have a feeling. And and I trust the feeling and I don't trust that person until proven otherwise. And when a few years ago this happened with a client, and there was someone coming in to take over like a management position, and I had this bad feeling upon, it was a man, but he seemed so nice. But I shook his hand when I met him, and I had an immediate, like a visceral, something mostly in my gut, but it also feels like it's kind of under my skin. And I felt there was something wrong. And it turned out there was something wrong. And I can't really talk about what that was. It wasn't criminal or anything like that, but he certainly made a mess of something that was important. And, caused a lot of unnecessary angst and stress, and he eventually moved on, and you know, is no longer even in Edmonton. But I will never forget that visceral response that I had. That was probably one that stands out for me the very most.
Mm-hmm. Well, you bring up an important point about, you know, this visceral response and the idea that physical touch, shaking his hand, gave you more information. Because I think that intuition is a really finely honed information, is a conglomeration of lots of pieces of data. So it can be, you know, things like shaking a person's hand, it can be seeing them, it can be hearing how they talk, or just something more ephemeral, like energetically, your intuition says, doesn't feel right. And I mean, I don't want to get too woo about this, but the fact of the matter is that intuition, the definitions you brought are very cognitive, you know, they're very brain. And I think intuition lives in us, in our bodies, and has to make its way up to our brain. And our brain has to say, okay, there's no evidence for what, you know, you're feeling, but I'm going to accept it because you've proven me right. And so there has to be sort of a meeting of the minds, the mind of the body and the mind of the brain, to make intuition really finely tuned, I think. Mm-hmm. And it only takes, I think, a few mistakes when you think, I wish I'd listen to my gut, before we start to say, you know, I'm going to take a beat before I make a decision. That's what I used to do in my job. I was a leader in communications, and so had to make decisions, you know, pretty quick decisions around, you know, media stories and, you know, messaging and all that kind of stuff. And when I was really at my sharpest, I would always take a beat and listen to what my body told me before I made a decision, because my intuition was going to be part of this decision-making process. It was a council member around the table of my decision making. So that makes me wonder, to what extent do you feel intuition plays a role in your business sense?
Oh, it plays a very big role now. And now that I can embrace the fact that I am intuitive by nature, I think I honor that intuition. I mean, I certainly, you know, don't use intuition to decide what my revenue is going to be, or, sure, you know, there's facts and figures and, you know, financial statements and all the normal tools of running a business. But it's a creative industry. And so there's still a lot of, there's more art than science, I would say. You know, I think that's the thing that dismays me a little bit at what's going on in media right now is, like the ChatGPT, it's not even accurate. I mean, if you're talking about a well-constructed sentence, okay, but it's not accurate, and there's no heart in it. Like, you can tell it's not written by a person. Mm-hmm. You know, we write stories, and they're not just creative stories; they're fact-checked. It's journalism.
Yes.
So we're following certain principles when we write these stories, and there's a story. It's not a report.
Right.
It's different writing.
Right.
So I think there is an intuition about, is this a good story? Because it can be technically a good story, but intuition comes in is, will our readers think it's a good story? So we do rely, we all rely on a certain amount of intuition. I think I probably use it, or perhaps should use it more around HR issues. You know, there's a formula sometimes, and we're living in a time when there's a certain amount of, what would I say? You know, some, we want to add to the diversity of our company, those kinds of things. And so sometimes you're not always making it strictly on intuition. Sometimes I have to make it on, you know, something I see on paper.
Right, right.
And so it's the, I think that where the wisdom needs to come in is, how do you bring together those things? How do you bring art and science together?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you have to grapple with that. That's not an easy combination.
No. Yeah, I think that intuition is something that's both innate and learned. And, or maybe the better word is, and I've used it before today, honed.
Yeah.
And, you know, that realizing when you haven't acted based on your intuition, or at least informed by your intuition, and that has had negative consequences, and, you know, learning from that experience and saying, my body has a wisdom that I have to tap into, it's a counselor, it's not a director.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. But I still think this whole notion of it can seem pretty airy-fairy,
mm-hmm.
when, you know, there's evidence on paper, or there's an evidence trail that points to a certain decision, but your body's telling you something else.
And we know from experience that what's on paper, all the hard data, just doesn't tell the whole story. It just doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
This is a robust conversation, which I think might need another episode.
Oh, but not yet.
But not yet. So I have a story that I can tell you about intuition. When I was about 19, I was in university. And I was taking English courses. I was minoring in English, and I majored in sociology, although I did my graduate degree in English. Anyways, I was taking an English course, and I was doing really well in the course. I was getting nines. That's how the grading worked back then, and when the dinosaurs still ruled the earth. And I had also concurrently lost a whole bunch of weight, and so I was just a little stick of a thing. And so I was doing really well in this class. And at one point, and I don't remember how that sort of sequence of events, but at one point he invited me to his house for dinner.
Mm.
And I was 19. And I was living with my mother at the time, which was, by the way, not fun. But I was living with my mother at the time. And when I told my mother, and I made a point to tell my mother had your reaction. And I didn't feel right about it. I didn't, but I mean, I was 19. He's my professor. So he picked me up. He came up to the apartment in which we were living. And my mom said, do you want me to talk to him first? And I said, yes, I do. So my mother had a, what are your intentions with my daughter conversation with him.
Oh, and wow.
And he was like, you know, he was very, you know, circumspect and said, no, you know, she's just a really good student, blah, blah, blah. So we went to his house, and he made dinner, which I recall being really pitiful. And he showed me around his house, and then I said, well, I think it's time I went home. So that was fine. He took me home, and then he kissed me on the cheek as I was leaving his vehicle. So now a couple of things happened. One, when the final exam came, I totally tanked. I had a 9 going in, and I totally screwed up the final exam, totally tanked it. And I think partly because of what had happened. And he gave me a low mark. So this is after I've been to his house. He gives me a low mark on a final exam. And I ended up, you know, getting a lower mark as my final grade, despite the fact that I'd had nines, the highest mark you can get throughout the class. Now, many teachers would take that as a, well, that was a, she had one bad performance. But I believe to this day that the fact that I didn't participate in what he, I think, wanted to happen cost me a grade.
Yeah.
And I had a little bit of intuition about that, but I didn't feel like I had any power because he had all the power.
So did that experience of you not, so you felt powerless, mm-hmm. but you did have some sense that something was wrong.
Yes, I did.
Did you build on that afterwards?
Oh, I think I did, yeah. I think I did. I mean, and again, like I've talked about before, it was a very physical feeling of this just didn't feel right. It just didn't feel right in my body. I had, you know, it was in my gut, in my chest. I thought, I didn't want to go, but I didn't think I had a choice because I was still being graded.
Right.
And it ended up costing me anyway.
It sure did. But wow, what, like your mom was, he met your mom.
I know. And he was about the same age as my mom.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he should have been asking my mom out, although I would have warned him against doing that. But yeah, he was kind of shameless. Yeah.
Well, these are the stories around me too.
Yeah, absolutely there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely there.
And so what do we learn from it? Wow.
Well, I think that one of the things I'd like to leave behind in this episode is to encourage people, especially women or any vulnerable population, is that listening to a gut, when you get a real strong visceral physical reaction to something, it is really important that you listen to it if you can, because it actually might mean the difference between something really bad happening or not.
That's a really good point. So what is our word of the day then, Lisa?
I think our word of the day is listen.
Yeah, that's a good one. Listen. Listen to your body.
Yep.
Listen to the cues going on around you.
Yep.
How that makes you feel.
Exactly.
That's exactly. A really good one. Listen.
Listen.
Okay, let's wrap.
All right. What a great conversation. Thank you, Trudy.
Thank you.
We'll see you all out there in listening land. To our crones, we'll see you next time.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Cronecast is produced by Odvod Media, odvod.com. Original music by Darren Hagen. Our podcasts are based on lived experiences. We are not experts in psychology, philosophy, gerontology, or mathematics. It's just a conversation between friends. We podcast from Edmonton, Alberta on Treaty 6 territory. Find us at cronecast.ca.